The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live by email, email her right now, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, checking all the plants in the studio, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary. Welcome. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Down the Garden Path. Can you hear me, Gary? My light's not on. Is that okay? I'm good? All right. Down the Garden Path, where each week we discuss down-to-earth advice and topics about plants, gardening, and our landscapes. And it's finally feeling like a little bit of spring out there. So it's an extra hour of daylight.
Yes, it's nice.
It's nice.
Very nice.
Everybody seems to be in a good mood. And
better mood anyways.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Not afraid to go. Somebody said on the radio, I wasn't afraid to go outside today.
Really? Yeah. Jeez. What are they? A mole? A troll? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess. So.
Well, you know, you got a very exciting show tonight.
I
was looking at your program description.
Yes. Yes.
And you're all over social media, which is great. And this is going to be a really interesting topic, I think.
Yes. So I don't know everywhere you turn these days,
yeah.
The topic, and whether it's social media, newspapers, even trade shows,
mm-hmm.
Everyone is talking about bees.
Yes, bees. And they don't mean the letter.
No, they don't mean the letter. And so much so that my March newsletter that went out last week, you know, I do a monthly newsletter for my customers.
Yep.
And to, you know, what to do in the garden every month. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a little different when we're not actually out in the garden. So I try to pick topics of interest for my readers.
Absolutely.
And I decided to write an article a bit about the bees and learn a little bit more myself about what we've been hearing about in social media and in the news.
Let's just make sure, because you have listeners from all around the world. We're
yes.
not talking about the birds and
the
bees.
Yes.
We're just talking about
the insect,
the bees.
The pollinators.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's actually in the news all over the world, including England. I mean, all over Europe. It really is becoming a really global topic. So
mm-hmm.
very timely, I think. So after doing my research and writing the article, I still had questions and I still wanted to know more. So what better way to learn more would be by talking to someone who is much closer and much more invested in the issue than
mm-hmm.
me as just a landscape designer.
And probably got stung.
Yes,
maybe.
Yes, maybe. We'll have to ask
We're
him.
Gonna ask
so
that.
I was able to, through a mutual friend, get connected with Steve Lawrence, who is a local in our area here in Durham region in Ontario, beekeeper.
And he's not the singer.
He's not the singer,
he's
Steve.
Not the
I
singer.
Know, you just informed
right,
me. There's a right. Steve, did you know there was a...
Yeah, he knows.
Yes.
I bet you. People
okay.
have asked him all the time, oh, Steve Lawrence.
Yes.
You sing too, don't you?
So I'd like to welcome my guest to the show tonight.
Hello.
Hi, Steve. Are you there?
Yes. And you guys are definitely over 35 if you know who Steve Lawrence is.
That's right. We definitely are.
I'm pushing 60, Steve.
Yeah. Back in the old days when I'd make a phone call, you know, on a pay phone.
Oh, yes.
That's going way back, too. But it would say, could we have your name, please? And I'd say Steve Lawrence. And they'd say, could you give us a real name?
Oh.
Yeah.
And it'd be, how about Mickey Mouse?
Yeah.
Did they ask you if you related to Edie Gourmet?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah. But I haven't got that in the last 10, 15 years.
Oh, there you go.
How old are you, Steve?
51.
Okay.
Okay.
Very nice.
So, yeah, so we'd so
Joanne kind of looked at me when I said Steve Lawrence, right? She said, what band is he in?
Well, I need a band. I can't just have the singer. I need the band.
She's
right?
a young. She's
so
a
I'm
young
a little bit younger. So,
speaking of springtime,
yes,
we did an experiment this year. We put half our hives in the drive shed of the garage, closed the doors for the winter, and let them actually kind of, you know, hibernate inside the garage. Today we popped the doors open and let the sunshine in and the warmth come in, and I moved three hives out into the yard. And some people said they'd be afraid of spring. Well, you might be afraid to go in the garage because there was about 3,000 bees in my garage. Very active today.
Excellent.
Loving it and cleaning out the hives, which is a real mess of my drive shed now.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, yeah.
And I'm just realizing, Steve, that there's part of your bio that I missed. So while you're here, I'd like to say that you are from Dare to Dream Farms in Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
You are a serial entrepreneur with a passion for outdoors and nature. And a couple of years ago, you became a beekeeper.
Correct.
And just last fall, your Sweet Dreams Honey was awarded first place at the Royal Winter Fair, which I can imagine is the biggest competition for honey in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's exciting, and beekeeping is more than just a hobby or a business. It's an addiction.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, thank you for keeping my tea well flavored.
You're welcome. And do you get stung? You're not a beekeeper unless you've had 100 sting nights. So
wow.
Yes, I've been stung.
Oh wow!
I've had 4 of those nights. So yes, that's not saying I'm a good beekeeper. That's just saying we've had 100 sting nights. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, so 100 stings at a time.
Yeah, we try and move the hives in the night.
Okay.
And bees don't necessarily fly in the evening. In the night, they want to crawl. We move them at night because they're back in the hive. So the girls are a little grumpy, and they don't like to be disturbed in the night because they've been out flying, collecting nectar all day and pollen all day. And then at nighttime, we decide we're going to move them, and they're not too happy. So unless we've got them closed up properly before we move them, or a hive comes apart, then they're all over you. So, yes. Yeah. But that's okay. You get used to it.
You know, it's a good thing that Steve, I don't know this, but he's not allergic to bee stings, right? Because, as you know, people can go into shock and they can die from that.
Yeah, I guess that would be one thing to verify before entering into that passion.
Well, I asked my doctor before I started beekeeping, I said, you know, should I have an EpiPen just in case? Because I've been stung before, but I haven't swelled up from wasps and hornets and everything else. And she said, no, a bee sting isn't the same as the other stings. If you swell up, if it becomes too much, you've got more than enough time to get to the hospital. Normally, we carry or we have around the house some allergy medicine.
Yeah, Benadryl or something, yeah.
And we'll, you know, we might swig it right out of the bottle 3 or 4 times, but it's not too bad.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know of anybody that's died from actual honeybee stings.
Right.
So it's not as bad. And 9 out of 10 times, they're not out to get you. Their whole idea is to collect nectar. And when they sting you, they die. So it's kind of like a kamikaze mission anyways.
Wow. Yeah. Do you use that smoke stuff to control? Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, we've got to hear about that.
Gary's all excited
I'm all
now.
Excited.
Well, the reason we use the smoke, and everybody says, oh, the smoke, it must calm them. Smoke initiates the reaction that there's a forest fire coming. And the bees think it's a forest fire coming. They smell the smoke. The first thing they do, their survival instinct is eat as much sugar as they possibly can and get ready to leave. So as soon as they go back in the hive and they gobble, gobble, gobble sugar, they become kind of drunk and stupid.
Oh. Wow.
And that's what calms them.
Oh,
the actual
okay.
smoke is that they think it's a forest fire. So we try not to use too much smoke.
Right.
Try and get in and out. The safest time to be in the hive is when it's a hot, bright, sunny day. And most of the hive isn't even in the hive. They're gone out collecting nectar.
I might have to get into this.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Yeah, well, come on at any time.
Yeah.
It sure beats radio.
No, does it? Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you make that? I mean, that seems like a big, were you always interested in farming? Was it something that, you know, or just kind of happened?
Well, I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a corn farm. Dad worked in General Motors on the line, blue collar, and he spent 8 hours on the line and 8 hours working on the farm. And in 1984, my dad was up to 600 acres of corn that he was running, so I understand the plight of the corn farmers. And he was killed in a farming accident.
Oh, no.
And I made a vow and a promise that day that I would never get into that stupid thing called farming. Why would anybody want to do that?
Mm.
It'd the most ridiculous thing in the world. Well, you fast forward, I have kids, and I get settled down, and I start getting very, very sick, and I can't understand why. And it turns out I had Lyme disease. And okay. Recovering from Lyme disease and taking antibiotics and everything else for Lyme disease, it was really critical to know what was in my food that I was eating.
Mm-hmm.
And to stay away from processed food as much as I could, get away from antibiotics that I don't know was in the food, and pesticides and that kind of stuff. So I started with maple syrup, which the sap is just starting to run, so we do that as well.
Okay.
And got into chickens and laying hens and a little bit of that on the corner of the family farm. My mom's still on the farm.
Okay.
And that kind of got a little bit bigger and bigger. And next thing you know, I bought 2 beehives and turned it into 35 beehives. And that addiction was there. And I said, you know what, I need to expand this. I really like the beekeeping. I want to expand the operation. And we went to take over the family farm, and that was not to be had. There was no way I was taking that over. And we went shopping and bought our own farm.
Wow.
So we're about 10 kilometers north of the family farm, and this had more opportunities anyways, barns and stuff.
Right.
We built the extraction room, the honey house, the store on the farm, and we've really made it. The farm is called Dare to Dream Farm, and it's to know where your food comes from. So we welcome people to come out, take tours of the farm. I'll show you how beekeeping works, show you the hives inside a hive. There's about 7.5 kilometers of walking trails I've cut. There's a pond to fish in. And people are more than welcome to come out and see where their food comes from.
Wow, that is great. So yeah. It really was a slow transition. So you didn't really necessarily set out just about the bees, but
no, right.
It became a health issue.
It was more a health issue for the beekeeping. When I started the first day I started beekeeping, I had never seen the inside of a beehive.
Really?
So, and that was the first night that I started beekeeping was my first 100 sting night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, and so that must have been, you must have really loved it because there was a second night of second
well,
day of beekeeping.
Well, I had money invested. I couldn't turn around at that point. And
yeah.
I said, you know what? The next day I figured out what I did wrong. It was
okay.
It was a new bee mistake.
Right.
And I said, okay, we're going to have to turn this thing around. And once I figured out how little information I got to start was bad information, and then we got going after
okay.
that.
Okay. So can anyone start?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, there's some challenges with some of the different towns and municipalities and some of the local bylaw rules.
Okay.
About having bees in town. I'm not up on all of those rules.
Right,
but,
right. And wherever our listeners are kind of from all over the world,
right.
So that would be the similar situation you'd have right. to look into.
And I've got a passion that whenever we travel, we try and visit a beekeeper. So next Thursday, I'll be in Costa Rica.
Ooh.
And I'm spending the day with a beekeeper in Costa Rica during our week's vacation. But I've got Thursday booked with a beekeeper.
You're kidding. That's fascinating.
Yeah, we were in Hawaii. We picked up some great tips on how to infuse flavors into honey in the Big Island and made a lifelong friend there, and I don't know if that person will ever want to come to this white country.
Yes. Maybe in the fall. No, not this time of year. Maybe in the fall when the colors change, you know.
And they can't believe down south that we only have 2 nectar flows. So we only have a very small nectar flow in the early spring, and then we have our large flow in the, you know, August, September is our big nectar flow, where they may have 3 or 4 nectar flows.
Really?
So the amount of honey they get is substantially more than we get.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's done all over the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating that you went from maple syrup to honey.
Yeah, I still have a passion for maple syrup.
Yes.
Still do. Yeah, we've got.
So you must have a lot of, do you have trees on the property?
Well, I thought I bought a farm full of maple trees. We bought it in the fall when there was no leaves on the trees.
Oh.
And they all look like maple trees. And I had a forest consultant come in, take a look at the farm. And he said, I hope you got a good drill to drill your trees, to tap your trees. And I said, oh, why? And he goes, and you know the sap's going to be very bitter. I said, why? And he goes, well, your trees are hickory and oak. So we're not tapping the farm trees, but I've got a very good friend about a couple kilometers away. We've got 25 acres.
Okay.
So we've got about 500 taps going in on his property.
All right.
And Steve, I'm sorry I missed it. Where is your farm located?
Kendall. Out
Kendall.
Near, just east of the 115 highway near Bremacombe Ski Hill.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Out that way.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful country out here.
Oh, yeah. And now, and you grew up near, like you said, 10 miles near there.
10 kilometers south of here, more near the lake.
Okay.
But on the exact same, straight north, absolutely straight north of where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And it must have been quite successful to go from your, you know, being new at the honey to winning that competition.
Well, yeah, I've got a thing where I don't jump in anything halfway. I've got to do it right.
Okay.
So I've really got a passion to make sure that I do as much as I can and learn as much as I can. And I've got over 30, 35 years of sales and marketing experience. So for me, the goal was if I can win that Royal Winter Fair competition, that's a feather in my cap and that's a marketing piece for me. So
right.
Let's see what we can do to win it. And I did a lot of homework on what it takes to win and how to win. And the honey that we won in two categories. So we came first place with our buckwheat honey or our dark honey.
Okay.
And we came second place with our amber honey. And the buckwheat honey traditionally in Ontario, for the listeners around the world, buckwheat is a flower that's grown for the buckwheat seed. And buckwheat seed can be used for flour, different types of cooking, but it's also used in pillows for buckwheat pillows and stuff like that. It's a very specialty thing.
Okay.
In the early days, back in the 20s and 30s, buckwheat was grown everywhere. And it was the poor farmers' weed control. So they put buckwheat in the fields, and it would knock the weeds back.
Okay.
Today, buckwheat's not grown very much. It's mainly grown in Manitoba. So in Ontario, there's very few buckwheat growers. I didn't think there was enough buckwheat in the area, so I grew 7 acres of my own buckwheat.
Oh, okay.
Just for the bees. And I didn't do it for the seeds or any of the crop at all. I grew it just for the bees. Well, it turns out that buckwheat seed is actually worth $800 a ton, and I tilled it in before I found that out.
Oh, no. Okay.
Not to worry. We got some amazing honey from it, and we got a very unique flavor, which that's why we won at the Royal Winter Fair.
Oh,
well, I remember buckwheat from the Little Rascals.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a different buckwheat.
That's right. And right. I know, because I know, and if my mother and father-in-law are listening, that buckwheat honey is their favorite, and they found it very hard to find.
It's very hard to find, and it's usually much more expensive than anywhere else.
Yes.
It's a love or hate. If you love honey, the taste of buckwheat honey is a strong, very
strong
molasses-y taste.
Yes. I know I don't. My husband likes it, and one of my sons likes it, and the other son and I find it too strong.
Yeah, and the buckwheat honey that we won with, people that don't normally like buckwheat actually love it.
Oh, okay.
It's got a nice caramelly flavor. It's really the goldenrod's coming through because it really was crossed with goldenrod.
Okay.
And it's a big hit.
Excellent. So will you be doing that again? Will you be doing the buckwheat again?
Yeah, we're going to do a buckwheat. I don't want to say this out loud, but I like to win every category of the Royal.
And I know, and how I got, you and I were connected was through Janice.
Yes.
And she said you would come into the nursery looking for plants because, you know, you wanted to try and make flavored honey. So,
Well,
I think.
The issue around the world is if you go to some parts of Germany, they grow a plant called the heather plant.
Right.
And heather honey is much sought after, very much like your mom and dad want the buckwheat honey.
Yes.
They want that heather honey. So I said, why can't we grow that here?
Yes.
So my intent was to grow an acre or two of heather. Well, I wasn't very successful. That plant didn't really take off. I think our climate's okay, but I think you need to grow it in more of a rocky, a rough ground.
Oh, okay.
And it really didn't go. And I tried it, but it didn't go. So I'm always looking for, you know, in some parts of the world, Manuka honey is a big one.
Yes.
When we were down in one part of Hawaii had a coffee honey. So I'm always looking for a different flavor honey.
Okay.
And what can we grow to do that? Quinoa
right.
is something I've been looking at.
Okay.
Putting in a field of quinoa because it's the ancient grain.
Yes.
We've got a new alfalfa we're going to plant on the farm in the springtime called San Juan. And it's a much different alfalfa than traditional alfalfa here. So the production rate for honey is supposed to be very, very high, and the flavor is very unique.
Okay.
So purple loosestrife, if you get anybody with a lot of purple loosestrife, that's got a minty flavor.
Okay. But that's an invasive.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yeah. They call it invasive. I call it flowers.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. The weed's in the eye of the beholder, right? A flower or a weed is in the eye of the beholder.
My favorite honey is milkweed honey.
Oh, really?
And on the farm, we are very well known for going around in the fall and
collecting milkweed seeds,
popping open the pods and spreading them.
Oh, that's great. So now you're helping the bees and the butterflies.
Well, my wife's got a real passion for the butterflies.
Oh,
so
great.
The other thing is, this is that most farmers would think you're crazy. Why wouldn't you put Roundup and kill those?
Yeah.
But to me, wildflowers are wildflowers.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all good.
For sure. And that was kind of a good segue, Steve.
Because
It's very hard to talk about bees. Even today, I was actually looking for a photo on the internet of a bee, you know, for social media. And when I clicked the photo, it led me to another article. So it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'd like to talk to you a bit about the concern of the bees, mm-hmm. and the pesticides and the bee die-off that has been in the news, mm-hmm. and even over the last few days. And all over the world, because that one article I clicked on was actually talking about because I thought it had been the pesticides had been banned in England, mm-hmm. but it looks like that they're still trying to fight that. So it's kind of going back and forth. So
let me preface by saying, back to what I said earlier, my dad was a corn farmer.
Yes.
He ran 600 acres of corn. So I completely understand crop farming. I understand how that works. I understand the farmers. I have no complaints against the farmers whatsoever. I can't believe how narrow the rows are and how many plants they can put in a field now in an acre compared to what they did back in the 80s.
Right.
That world has changed so much. And the problem with that is when they put the crop that tight and that many plants in a field, one bug gets in there and it can take out that whole field because it can move through that field, you know, like a wildfire.
Okay.
So they need to have control, and
yeah.
I understand they need to have control. The issue, you know, this is exactly parallel with smoking back in the 70s. So back in the 70s, everybody said that, you know, cigarettes aren't that bad. They're okay. What's causing cancer is stress.
Oh, okay.
What's causing cancer is pollution.
Okay.
What's causing cancer is everything but
tobacco.
Cancer stick, nicotine. And that fight was a huge fight because money was involved,
yeah.
on both sides, basically. The bee issue is exactly the same. The farmers are terrified to lose the pesticides, and the reason they're terrified to lose the pesticides is they're being told that if they lose the pesticides, they're going to lose their crops.
Right.
The beekeepers are the ones that are saying, this is the canary in the coal mine. We're
mm-hmm.
watching this happen.
Yeah.
We're watching this kill off the bees, and it doesn't kill them.
Right.
So the
okay.
idea of the, and I'm going to drop some names, Bayer
okay.
and Monsanto, their publications say, you know what, there's no level of this neonicotinoid pesticide that will actually kill the bees, and it's safe. It's safe for people. It's safe for the whole environment.
Right.
The problem is it's called two things. One is called systemic,
okay.
and the other is called the neurological effects of the pesticide on any creature.
Right. Okay.
So,
and that is definitely key. So because I really want to spend some time on the whole systemic topic. So let's take a little break, and we will definitely come back and wrap up that subject. All
sure.
right?
Sounds good.
So it's time for a commercial break. You are listening to Down the Garden Path. I'm Joanne Shaw, and you are listening to Reality Radio 101.
Looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario, or visit our website at www.PamperMeOrganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price.
Hey, it's George Andrew here. I am a full-time freelance and independent disc jockey and have been operating for many years in the GTA and surrounding areas, playing the whole spectrum of the DJ world at many and every type of function and occasion. I have also owned and operated my own DJ service and company, Go Ahead Disc Jockeys, at your service. My range of bookings includes banquet halls, nightclubs, bars, weddings, radio, fashion shows, cruise boats, schools, sports stadiums, product launches, corporate events, and the spectrum of engagements goes on and on and on. Equipment-wise, I use Denon DJ technology, Electro Voice speakers, Yamaha and Crown amplification, and Shure microphones. I'm also fully insured with State Farm. More of my biography is available on the website. And if you require any further details, have any questions, or require further information, please contact me at your convenience. And stay dancing.
The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live, send her an email, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, a honey of a show, never to be outstung by anyone else here at Reality Radio 101, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary. You're definitely feeling better compared to the...
Yeah, I need help. And just honey might do it.
Yeah, might do the trick.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path. We're here with my guest, Steve, from Dare to Dream Farms. And you were going to, we were talking just a little bit about systemic, that big word, systemic chemicals and the neonicotic, you were probably going to have to correct me on how I say that. Been typing it so much, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's neonicotinoids. Okay. Neonics, we call them.
Neonics, okay. And there is a nicotine base to that.
Which is kind of funny.
Yes.
Because it's back to the parallel of the cigarette.
Yeah, so is that coincidental or?
No, I think it's the whole nicotine, and I don't know if you know anything about nicotine, but nicotine's a very strange chemical. They're finding all kinds of positive uses for it as well.
Right.
But it's also deadly. It's got so many deadly principles to it that it works.
And I know they've prevented us from using pesticides on our lawns and our trees. You know, anything that's systemic now in your own home gardening, you can't use.
I don't know whether they use the word systemic, but just to let the listeners know what a systemic pesticide is, systemic means that it travels.
Okay.
So the systemic pesticide, and where we see it the most is on a kernel of corn seed on a large corn farm. So they plant the seeds. It's coated with this systemic pesticide called neonicotinoids. There's many different names for it. It's approved by the CFIA, so it's approved by Agriculture Canada. And when the kernel pops open and shoots its roots out, the pesticide is in its roots. So if anything eats, bites, or looks at the roots, it's going to die.
Okay.
As the stalk grows, the pesticide travels with it. That's why it's called systemic. So if anything eats the stalk, it dies.
Right.
As the leaves come out, anything that eats the leaves will die. Anything that eats the tassel will die. Anything that eats the kernels will die.
Wow.
So now all of a sudden it's protected the entire plant. Fantastic.
Yes.
For a farmer.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. The problem is the systemic pesticides have a half-life of anywhere from 4 to 24 years. And what does a half-life mean? Half-life is the useful life of that pesticide. So how long is it acting for or working for? And it's between 4 and 24 years. That's one problem. The other problem is the breakdown of that pesticide, the chemicals that it creates when it bonds with the other soil and water in the ground, creates another pesticide, another chemical, which is 15,000 times worse than any DDT.
Wow.
So this is, it's a huge problem. So let's go back to the systemic pesticides.
Okay.
Now you've got a stock of corn.
Right.
The farmer comes in. The farmer's after the kernels. That's all the farmer takes from the stock of corn on a grain farm.
Okay.
They come in with the combine. The kernels go into the hopper in the back. The rest of it gets blown out the back of the combine onto the ground. The farmer then comes along and either tills it in or the snow lands on it and decomposes it and erodes it into the ground.
So it's never taken away. It's there.
It's always there. So the residual crop is left behind.
Okay.
Systemic neonicotinoid pesticides travel extremely well in water. They move through water better than oil and water. I mean, it'll just rip through water. So any runoff, when the rain hits it, it'll carry it into the stream, it'll carry it into the creek, it'll carry it into the well or the water table. So that systemic pesticide is in there, but it's at such a low level that it's not a risk.
Okay.
The problem is, in year two, it's twice as much as it was in year one.
All right.
By year four, we're four times as much.
Okay.
So everybody says, well, it must be the dust from the combine or the grain planting when they planted the seed. No, the reality is the water ran over to the edge and hit the dandelions. First thing in the spring when my bees wake up, they go over and get that dandelion, and they drink the nectar from the dandelion, and now they've got that neonicotinoid poisoning pesticide carrying it back to the hive.
Okay.
It's all through the hive. When they leave to go collect nectar, there's studies, and there's actually a guy in England that had a GPS tracker on the bees.
I read about that, yes.
The bee leaves, they go out to get the flowers, they hit the flower, the nectar on the flower, up to 8 kilometers away, they turn around and they can't find their way
right.
back, and they die.
Right, and there's some, just to change, not change the subject, but I learned this recently too, that the bees, you know, they do go far, and they go far for a specific flower, and then they know their way back.
Right.
And then
right.
the next day they go back to that flower.
Right.
And so they're very, very territorial. So for them to not, like, that's serious for them to be so confused that they can't get back.
Right. Well, they do what's known as the wiggle dance inside the hive. So the wiggle dance tells them which, how far, what direction to travel in. And then the army of them go zing, zing, zing out there after that same patch of flowers.
Okay.
And I'll come back. The problem is the neurological effects of systemic neonicotinoids reduces that ability to GPS find their way back.
Okay.
Now, let's go a step farther. I mean, that affects the pollinators known as the bees, but the wild pollinators of the world are much more important. They're a much greater importance to the whole environment and ecological well-being of us because they are pollinating everything. And that's,
right.
You know, the cutter bees, the bumblebees, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Those numbers are dropping.
Yes.
We're watching in the creek the number of insects are dropping. So I'm an avid lover of the wildlife, and I see all kinds of dead frogs along the edge of the bank.
Okay.
And the swallows' numbers are dropping because the swallows eat bugs.
Right. And we know the butterflies as well.
The monarch butterflies.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen a reduction in mosquitoes and black flies on the farm.
Unfortunately, yeah.
No, that would be okay. We lost a few of those, but... It's really the canary in the coal mine, and we're seeing what happens when, you know, you affect something with something as small as a neonicotinoid systemic pesticide, how it goes through the whole food chain. But what nobody's really talking about, or they're talking about very little, is what's the effect when you eat flour or products that have neonicotinoids in them. What happens to you as a human when your whole immunity is built around your gut and the bacteria in your gut?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's when I was doing my research for my article, I felt that way. I felt like were the bees kind of the first indicator to our health?
Yeah.
And your analogy with the canary in the coal mine was perfect.
Yeah. And I've always said, you know, if there was no money in bees and honey, nobody probably would even be questioning any of this.
Yeah.
Because who cares about those monarch butterflies?
Yeah, really.
And who cares about, you know, the mayfly on the edge of the creek other than a trout fisherman?
Yeah.
No, so there's no money, so there's no voice, but it's when it started affecting the bees, that's when the kind of the spark went off, whoa, wait a second. You know, last winter I had 80 hives in the fall. in the springtime, I had 20 left.
Really?
So
that's kind of good for our listeners, or anyway, our local listeners, because sometimes when you're reading about it, you think it's happening, you know, all over the world, but not necessarily in your backyard. But yeah. It's happened here to you.
Yeah, and it's and I can't just put my finger on neonicotinoids because it's not. It's not evident that it's one thing. We can't say it was just that, and that's that neurological, short term, little bit added it up, and then it killed them off.
Right, and it's not as far as an important in the sense of money. It's not just the honey, but people, you know, need like the blueberry effects, like something like the blueberry crop. I've read about the almond crop in California.
Yeah.
They rely solely on bees to pollinate those crops.
Exactly.
So it's not just, you know, it definitely is, like you said, the money speaks volumes, and money is what has gotten everybody's attention.
Yeah. But it's that attention's also been good because it's much bigger than just the honey and the bees.
Right.
So we really need to take a look at that. Like I said before, my fight is not with the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
My fight is not anybody that grows corn and grain and all that stuff. And in the community, Bayer and Monsanto have kind of put such a strong thing that, you know, us beekeepers are trying to shut them down.
Right.
Some of the farmers, I don't want to say have turned on me, but people that used to look at me and talk to me about how are the bees, those same farmers now really just kind of turn and walk away.
Mm.
They don't know what to say to me, and they don't know how to deal with this, and they think I'm fighting them. And honestly, I'm not.
Right, right.
You know, everybody's got to be able to survive. And if it's affecting their grandkids, would they still do it?
Yeah. Well, and we don't know, right? We don't know what the effect is.
Well, then the question is if you don't know what the effect is, should you use it until you figure out what the effect is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the problem is all of the Bayer Monsanto research papers said this is 100% safe.
Right.
CFIA do not do their own studies. They use those peer reviewed studies by Bayer Monsanto.
Yeah.
That's how they determine whether they should approve it or not.
Yeah. And like you said, that's what happened back in the day with nicotine, right?
Same thing. Yeah.
Same thing. And it is a difficult issue because you do want, you know, it seems like a vicious circle because the, you know, you want the farmers to be successful. It's a challenging career path for sure.
Yep.
And they need the pesticide to keep their insects under control. But then we need the bees in order to pollinate the crops.
But we also need humans to eat those crops.
Yes.
So, you know, and yes, if we don't have crops, we don't have humans. If we don't have bees, we don't have crops, we don't have humans.
Yeah.
So if we have pesticides, are we going to kill everything?
Right.
So, and I'm not saying that we have to eliminate the pesticides, but I think we got to be super careful to say, what is the effect of what you're putting on a crop today to the entire environment?
Right.
Don't just test the LDL level and the legal deadly limit for a pesticide on one bee. Let's look at the whole long-term
the whole
causes.
Picture. And you think that has contributed to the kind of greater movement as well of eating organic and, you know.
Yeah, I think it's kind of timing of everything.
Yeah. I know people are skeptical, though, when we say, you know, when you look at the organic food on the grocery store, I know most people are a little bit skeptical.
I am.
Yeah. So if you are, then we're really doomed. But, you know, is there a way for farmers to grow organically if their neighbors who share the water are using the seed that's been treated?
That's a very good question.
Okay.
The big issue that I really want to make a point on too is our food industry is very regulated about how much pesticide we use.
Mm-hmm.
However, the plant industry, what do you call them? The plotted plants and the plants you would buy at Home Depot.
Oh, yes, the nurseries. Yeah, I had that question down for you. Yes.
Yeah, that stock is not as regulated as to what they grow in.
Okay.
So for them, I mean, I think it's called the cut aphid is the biggest enemy of a greenhouse.
Right.
They have to dose and completely coat their flowers in the greenhouse and the seeds and the entire place with systemic pesticide.
Okay.
And it works extremely well because that wipes everything out and they got a clean environment and you get beautiful flowers.
Right.
The problem is you bring those flowers home trying to help my bees.
Yes.
And you plant them in your garden. They look pretty. My bees come and take a drink of nectar and guess what? You've just poisoned my bees.
All right. So yeah, we're jumping ahead to one of my questions, but that's perfect timing. So what can we do? I mean, I know that was in the news big last year, and some of the big box stores said that they would do better labeling.
Right. That's what's coming. The Greenhouse Association of Ontario. He spoke at the Ontario Beekeepers meeting, and he's very concerned. And he understands both sides of it as well.
Right.
And I understand his side as well. They're going to try and do labeling at, I think it's Home Depot and Lowe's.
Okay.
To say, you know, which ones were treated with neonics and which ones weren't. They're also working on IPM, which is integrated pest management, trying to use natural pest control.
Okay.
But it's not something they can do instantly.
Yeah, it's not an overnight fix.
No. And the problem with neonicotinoids is everybody says, well, we'll study it. Well, you know what? It's been studied to death since 2004.
And it depends on who reads the study, it seems. Like
right.
from my research, right?
Right.
Everybody's reading the same study, but it's a different, you know, different perspective.
Yeah, let's go back to the 70s. It's the same as cigarettes.
Yeah.
Maybe they are safe.
We know
today that there was so much propaganda put out by the cigarette companies that... And so much backroom stuff going on, they knew they weren't safe.
Yes.
And I think it's the same as this. Now, the CFIA just approved two more neonicotinoids in November, two more systemic pesticides. They just approved them.
Okay.
With all of this going on, you would think they wouldn't approve them, but
yeah.
they did approve them because the data showed they were safe.
Well, yeah.
Who provided the data?
Yeah.
We're back to the same issue.
Yeah, for sure.
So it is a challenge.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of working with playing the cards that Mother Nature deals and doing the best we can.
And it must be a good sign that all your hives are okay this year.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the that are outside.
Okay.
That's in maybe tomorrow, the next day, I'll take a look at them. But the ones that we actually brought in the barn, closed the door, pumped them full of food in the fall, really babied them, those guys are really doing well.
Okay.
So, you know, what they're saying is that the pesticides and the environment is taking them down to a level where their immunity is very unhealthy in the fall.
Right.
What I think I've done is I boosted their immunity by bringing them inside. And even if they were a little weak, they didn't need all of their energy stores to survive in those.
Okay.
This nasty winter thing we got going on.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a stop for a moment and take our second commercial break. And then we'll get back to talking more about bees. So it's time for a commercial break. You're listening to Down the Garden Path, and you are listening to Reality Radio 101.
Are you looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario. Or visit our website at www.pampermeorganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price. Do you worry about your pet becoming bored at home alone or while you are at work? If you love your pets but don't have the time to walk and play with them, Corey Hamilton can help. Growing up with a never-ending passion for animals, Corey is up for any challenge to make your pet healthy, happy, and fun. With Corey's expertise, you'll never again have to worry about your pets being left home alone. Corey's company, Taking the Lead, will treat them like they are part of our family. Animal enthusiast Corey Hamilton loves anything with fur, fins, and feathers. Combined with her degree in biochemistry, your pets are not just in for some fun and play, but their needs are being well understood. Skip the guilt and let your pets enjoy their lives while you are rest assured in yours. For more information, contact Corey at 905-697-2788. That's 905-697-2788. Or visit us at www.takingthelead.ca. Remember, happy pets make a happy home. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. And now, back to Joanne.
Thank you very much, Gary. And I've been very, I can't believe how fast the time is going, Steve.
Yeah, me too.
I know, it just, the hour just flies by.
It's funny, you know, that commercial was just on about taking the lead, Corey Hamilton, and love your pets.
Yes.
There's a product called Advantix and a couple other products that you put on the back of a dog or a kitty cat's back, and that's to protect them from ticks and lice and fleas and all that other stuff. The commercial shows the whole protection, and the dog turns green. You know, like it's got a green shadow.
Oh, yes,
yeah. The whole body's protected. And that's because that is systemic neonicotinoids.
Wow.
That's exactly what they use. And it's about 1,500 times greater than you would ever see on any corn seed.
Wow.
And we put it right on our dog without even thinking about it.
Really?
So.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with regard to ticks and Lyme disease.
Yeah.
So how is your Lyme disease?
I'm going to say I'm probably 99% better.
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 And you think that's come from, you know, the antibiotics, the food, the change of...
Well, I went through a whole... I did about 2.5 years of research while I was recovering, and really for me it was a real strong round of antibiotics. I didn't go to the States or somewhere else in the world to get treated. I went through a very strong round of antibiotics for about 5 months. Had a lot of help from a doctor in BC who I met online.
Okay.
A very good guy. He's one of my guardian angels.
Wow.
And then I found some herbal remedies and a company that supplies herbal products out of Florida, and it's Nutramedics, and they were phenomenal. It's all pure and natural herb remedies, and they dictate how to take the drops of oil and the essence oils and all this kind of stuff. I did that for about 6 months, and then now it's about eating as clean as I possibly can.
Okay.
And not to say that I don't go to a restaurant, you know, with the wife or whatever, and eating as clean as I possibly can and knowing what's in my food.
Mm.
I try and really protect my gut. So it's I take very good probiotics.
Okay.
And I really watch to make sure I'm not eating processed and highly processed meat or meat that's come from a factory farm.
Right. Because you do other animal farming at your farm now as well.
We did do a lot more, and we were selling it to the public, but now it's more for ourselves.
Okay.
More than anything else.
Yeah.
But yes, we do. But
okay.
Yeah, we encourage people to come out, and we can show you how we do it and what we do.
Okay.
It's the regulations on processing food is
it's
so
pretty strict,
hard today for anybody trying to do farming.
Yeah.
It makes it very tough.
Okay. I know I have a guest coming on in a couple of weeks, a fellow landscape designer from the Waterloo area who has chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to talk to us about raising chickens in the backyard kind
of
thing. Again, depending on your municipality. So I'm really looking forward to listening to Janet.
Well, we raised two pigs this last summer, and it was a first kick for us because my wife and I, we can't eat store-bought pork. We get very achy joints.
Okay.
And we feel really rough for the next 2 or 3 days, almost hungover.
Oh.
And we really noticed that it comes from store-bought pork. So we said, well, we're going to get a couple of pigs to try it. We bought two little pigs and put them in the field. They didn't go in a barn. And traditionally, pigs are raised in a hog barn.
So right.
They never see the light of day. Well, these pigs, you should have put sunglasses on them because they were squinting when they came off the truck. They were having the time of their lives eating and rooting through the grass. And they tilled up about an acre of our pasture, about 8 inches deep, just like a rototiller. Hence, we named them Roto and Tiller.
Oh, geez.
And 3 days after we got them, they got a sunburn.
Oh, you're kidding.
Because they never had seen sunlight.
Oh, my goodness.
These were the happiest pigs you could ever imagine. Oh. And on our farm, we call
it... I hate the past tense, though. They were.
Well, we always call it they go to freezer camp.
Okay.
So farms on our animal are raised for us. And right. for us to enjoy.
Yes.
That's why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of their term, we send them to freezer camp. So that's a pretty exciting day. They get to go in the truck and, you know, and, but that's really what it is. And yeah. It's all the cycle of life.
And you found that you could eat that pork.
That pork did not taste like pork. It was more like a cross between pork and beef.
Wow.
It was very sweet. It was very... I'm not going to say, I don't want to use the word lean, but it was much more leaner than that fatty marbled pork you would get at the store. So mm-hmm. it cooks much different.
Okay.
And we don't even notice the effect of it.
Okay. That's so great to know. Yeah. See, it goes back to the food, doesn't it?
Back to what they eat.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now, just coming back to wrap up with about the bees, do you see it improving? I mean, I guess you're going to know when you open that other 50%, right?
I think as beekeepers, we're very careful of where we put our hives.
Yeah.
So I try not to put them where the runoff would come. I want them upstream of the water coming off the grain field.
Okay. And there was a ruling I read as well, so correct me if I'm wrong, that Ontario is taking notice, and their goal was to reduce the use of the neonics by 80% by 2017.
Right. Which is a couple of more years. Which,
yeah.
You know, we think it should be shorter than that.
Okay.
The farmers are really being hit hard with the propaganda that, you know what, you're going to lose your crops.
Okay.
You might as well put the farm up for sale now because you're going to be out of business.
Okay.
The reality is they've got about, by then they'll have about 13 years worth of pesticide in the soil. They're good for at least 3 or 4 years without putting any pesticide
on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of farmers, when I explain it to them, they say, well, why am I paying for the pesticide every year?
Yeah. Do they have a choice? Like, isn't it in their seed automatically?
Yes, that's the problem.
That's the problem. Because I know I've heard that where you couldn't. I think there's even...
GMO is the same thing.
Yeah.
You can't mess with it.
You can't mix... Yeah.
And they won't allow you to even touch it.
Wow.
So it is a challenge.
Oh, well, I hope there's... I mean, it's nice to see that there is some awareness out there and that Ontario, I could see what you mean, that you'd want them to move quickly, but nothing's done quickly, so...
No.
2017, and I really hope that there, you know, really can be, because obviously there are organic farms out there that must be using some kind of pest
IPM
control.
Management,
IPM management, yes.
Yeah, the problem is can those organic farms provide the food for the world at a cost that the world can afford it?
Right.
You know, the word organic generally means really expensive.
Yes. And probably because they can't create the volume because they don't, right, because there's...
Well, if they did monoculture on a field of 100 acres of corn that's planted 18 inches wide, 4 inches between each plant, one bug gets in there, I don't care what IPM they got, they can't control that.
Right.
So it'll get away from them. And that's where the big issue comes in, is that organic farms are producing smaller volumes, and it's a little more pricey. But, you know, we also have to do more of growing our own kind of
Yes,
products.
Yes, and definitely a big movement on that.
Yeah. I'm
for
a big
sure.
fan of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, as I can't believe the time is gone, and I hope we can have you back because I think there's a lot to talk about, and I look forward to hearing about your trip to Costa Rica. So
yeah. Well, I'd love to come back and talk to you about Lyme disease and, you know, how gardeners can be aware of that, because when they go to the doctor and they're sick and they don't know why they're sick.
Okay.
What to look for.
Okay, that's definitely a good topic. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to add or anything you'd like to promote or leave us with before you go?
No, anybody's welcome to come out and visit us on the farm at sweetdreamhoney.com.
Okay.
And if you got any questions, you can find my email on the website and yeah.
And it's Dare to Dream Farm in Kendall, Ontario.
Right. There's another Dare to Dream
in California.
Farms in California.
There is.
So we don't sell eggs and ship them all over the world like they do.
Okay. You're just in Kendall, Ontario. So for our listeners,
Kendall,
yes.
Next Saturday when we leave for Costa Rica.
All right. Well, have a wonderful trip. And thank you very much for joining our show. And thank you very much for all the feedback you gave us. So
thanks for the support on the bees and appreciate everybody listening.
Oh, thank you. Okay. And you have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Very nice.
Yes. Did you learn a lot, Gary?
I did.
I know.
I learned
a lot as well.
You always, when you talk to these guys that keep bees, the first thing on their mind always is, did you ever get stung? That's always a question people ask, right?
Yeah.
And then you always see those guys with those smoke containers.
Yes.
And you're wondering, it kind of does look like it drugs them because, you know, they get really tame around you. And I was always wondering about that.
Yeah.
You know, but
so we didn't even really talk much about those actual bees.
Right, the procedure,
it's such
too.
A huge topic. It really is. So I'm really looking forward to having Steve back on the show.
And the one thing about honey, again, and you know this, is a trivia question. That's the only food that would never spoil or rot or mold. Did you know that?
No.
It never, ever. It's the only food known to man that you can put on a shelf, and 100 years later, you could still use that honey and it would still be just as pure. It might crystallize a little bit and you just heat it up.
Yeah.
But that's the only food that you can do that to.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah, it really is a whole, I've listened to, like I said, with my research and listened to a few speakers and just how it's even manufactured and how the bees operate, you know, it's fascinating. And there was a few more questions. We just ran out of time. So I hope, listeners, I hope everybody enjoyed that as much as I did. If you have any questions, you can, I'm sure, email Steve, or if you want to email me and I can pass them on to Steve. I'd be happy to help.
What is your contact information?
So my website at downtoearth.ca with the number 2. My direct email is joanne@downtoearth.ca. So if you'd like to receive that newsletter I was talking about, you can just go on my website and there's a little sign up box at the top. And I just send you out a newsletter once a month and lets you know what to do in the garden. And April's will be very key and important because now we'll be getting into the garden in April. So really looking forward to that.
Very nice.
So I just hope our listeners enjoyed the show. If anybody is on Twitter, then please join me later on today at about 9 o'clock. I'm going to join the garden chat on Twitter.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's right. Hashtag garden chat. All the gardeners get on Twitter and we have a great call. I'm not sure what the topic was. I forgot to check. And next week, we're going to be talking to another farmer, but a different kind of farmer, I guess, in soil. So we're going to talk to a soil scientist. His name is Keith Reed. And 2015 is apparently the year of the soil. And so we're going to talk about how we manage our soil for our gardens.
It's always the year of something.
I know. And I don't know who says it is.
Yeah. Year of the soil.
That's right.
Very nice.
So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And joining me down the garden path, you
are
listening to us on Reality Radio 101. All these things going through my head about bees. So
that's
thank you for joining us on Reality Radio 101. And we look forward to hearing you, listening to you and talking to you next week.
Bye-bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw. Right here on Reality Radio 101.